All right. Thank you, Daniel.
Does everybody have a copy of the lesson about hope? Next week's lesson? We'll come to this next week. It looks like everybody's got one. Okay. We're going to try to finish our lesson about pride today. There's a lot to it. I did not do a very good job of managing how far along we got last week, so we've got a lot of ground to cover today. We won't be able to look at all of the verses. Hopefully you're doing that on your own time. There's really, in all of the lesson, just too much to cover, so I hope you're taking a look at that prior to class. I really appreciate the discussions we had last week in our first lesson about pride. Our challenge, my challenge, is to be able to see the subtle nature of pride in me. I don't know how you feel about that, but I know I have some pride, and I just need to be able to see that, and once I see it, I can better deal with that. But isn't that what it's all about, is seeing it in ourselves? We're so inclined to see it in other people. Easy to do that, but when we turn it to ourselves, we got to be able to do that, to see it in ourselves. It's so damaging. We talked about a little bit of some things last week that show us the damaging nature of pride. We've looked at most of this first page on your pride lesson. Proud of how well we serve God. We talked about that. The pride that we can have in what we know. Pride that we can have over our possessions. Talked about that story in Luke last week. Before we move off of this point, though, I want to look at point D on the outline. Pride that can cause us or prevent us from socializing with others. And I'm thinking primarily of the church, so socializing. Obviously, we fellowship with one another when we're here, but a lot of times our conversations are more about socializing, too, when we're talking about things other than church. So if you feel more comfortable with the word fellowship, that's okay. Is there a sense in which the church is a haven for us?
Yes.
It is. And we can use that word haven in many ways. We have a lot in common spiritually. We're comfortable worshiping with one another. We should be comfortable worshiping with one another every Sunday. When we look at Acts chapter 2, we can see how the early Christians were very comfortable with one another. They met all of the time. They worshiped God together. They prayed together. They ate together. They met together. Just a lot of things that they had in common there. So we're familiar with that. And then in the book of Galatians, this first text that we're going to look at this morning on your outline, we see something happen among brethren there that should never have happened. And so pride gets in there, doesn't it? We understand that it can even get into the church. And unfortunately, the example here that we see is from the Apostle Peter, which turns out to be a bad example. So let's read this text. Don, I'll have you read it, please. It's in Galatians chapter 2, verses 11 through 13. There's a lot more than that there, of course. But Don, if you'll read those, and then we'll come back and talk about it a little bit.
13?
Yes, please. 11 through 13.
But when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For before certain men came from James, he was eating with the Gentiles. But when they came, he drew back and separated himself, fearing the circumcision party. And the rest of the Jews acted hypocritically along with him, so that even Barnabas was led astray by their hypocrisy.
Okay, good. Again, more of the story than what Don just read. What's in this story? We see fear in this story. We see hypocrisy. We see pride. We see.
See a little bit of racism, too.
Racism. Favoritism. Racism. Good. There's a lot here to talk about, and we're just going to keep it brief this morning. Sometimes we hear people say in our day and time, I called him out. Or I called them out. Paul calls Peter out here, if we want to put it that way. Why did he do that? Why does he call him out? A fellow apostle to apostle.
Yeah. He was wrong.
Yeah. There's, yeah, he's wrong. We're going to come back to that in a minute.
And Peter's example is public. You know, Peter's made a very public issue out of this. Yeah. So they Paul addresses it publicly.
Yeah, good. Nathan, good. Don.
He's leading others astray. He's mentioned Barnabas.
Yeah. And surprising that both Peter and Barnabas, and some others too, but especially those two, we'll come back to that in just a minute. Peter has done the wrong thing here. And I, you know, when I think about what happened here, and I want you to misunderstand me when I say this, but I don't think we're seeing the real Peter here, because we see Peter's writings, we see later on, obviously he was very impulsive early years, but later on, in fact, in the books of his writings, he speaks about humility and he speaks about submission and those kinds of things. But I don't think we're seeing the real Peter here. And when I say that, I can also say this, that we all have experience with that. How many times have we said in our lives, why did I say that? Or why did I do that? It's happened to all of us, hasn't it? If it hadn't, it will. But so Peter, you know, before we ever say, I would never do something like this, let's remind ourselves that sometimes the mouth is engaged before we're ever thinking about what we're going to say. And so I don't think it's the normal Peter. I'm not trying to make excuses for what happened here. He was wrong in what he did. What was Peter's fear?
Peer pressure. The other Jews, they were out of the comfort zone too. They were out of Jerusalem, and
they're in Antioch. Yeah.
They're in Antioch. Yeah. Okay. I knew. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Anyway, he's out of his position, so to speak. He's got big people with him, Jews that he looks up to or looks up to him, yeah. And
yeah, I don't have a chronology chart that shows how long it's been since the events of Acts chapter 15, where all of that was addressed. But there were Judaizing teachers there who created an issue, if I remember right, in Antioch, which led Paul and Barnabas to go to Jerusalem. So maybe it is that some of those same of the circumcision have come there. I don't know how all that fits together and how long a period of time it was. But that may be what's on Peter's mind here. That he sees these of the circumcision come there, and maybe he just feels like I've got to show a different face here. And he sure did show a different face. He's afraid of them. Again, he's a good man. Barnabas is a good man. They're both just, for whatever reason that was working on these two men, it led them to do the wrong thing. What's so surprising, though, about Peter doing this?
What surprised me here is at chapter 10 and 11, where he sees the vision and then he teaches Cornelius, and then he has to actually explain why in Acts chapter 11 what happened there.
Yeah.
And then you go over to Acts 15, James specifically mentions, he calls him Simeon or Peter, I can't remember there, where they worked on all those issues. They had a good discussion there. They thought it was settled in, and then, I don't know after how long after, like you said, that chronologically,
yeah.
I get lost sometime, but
yeah.
But it just tells you, as people as strong, and Peter was an elder, eventually somewhere, because he's called an elder, but we all struggle. Peer pressure is real, and we get caught in certain situations and we're not prepared. And there was just like when he denied Jesus.
Sure.
If he got in that context, and why did I do that?
Yeah.
Why did I do that?
Yeah. Peter's the very one that said, as Joel pointed out, Cornelius. Peter's the very one that, referring to him, said God shows no favoritism. And here he does. He's the very one that said that the Gentiles now are coming into the kingdom. So he recognized the importance of them, that they're saved the same way. there's no, they don't have to be circumcised, and yet Peter seems to be letting all of that get to him and changing his behavior. Barnabas, go ahead, Martha, we'll talk about Barnabas.
For example, in my Bible, and I know this is not scriptural, but I've gotten some time element. They said it about 49 A.D. So, 15 years after, after Pentecost, and Arthur Day. So, anyway, some kind of period of that.
You know, the text doesn't bring it out, but you know that there were some hurt feelings. Gentiles are probably now questioning, you know, what's this man, Peter, who says he's an apostle? What's he all about? Really? What's the man all about? Paul and Barnabas, Paul probably has to go into some damage control here and try to make right what's happened. In fact, what we've just read and the other things that come after that, you see Paul trying to make it right or trying to help Peter understand what he's done. But Barnabas is the one that really surprises me because he and Paul has spent so much time with the brethren at Antioch making that group a more holy, a more devout group. They've spent a lot of time with them. They've invested a lot of time with them. For Barnabas to do what he did, it just amazes me that Barnabas could have been so quick to follow him in Peter's steps. Any comments out there or questions? Pam. Yeah, you could. You can. Yeah, obviously. Anyone else? old wounds may have been open here again because of the Jew-Gentile thing. Brethren, it doesn't matter what your culture is. It doesn't matter. Whether your pride of your nationality or the group that you have grown up with, none of that matters. What matters most, though, is that we try as best we can to cause unity to grow and love for the brethren to grow and have that one heart and one soul attitude that this church that we just read about in Acts had. All of our things that we may have internally about group, pride, national spirit, all of that has to take a back seat, doesn't it, to the growth of the brethren and growing internally among each other, having the proper kind of love that we should have. We see that violated here in this text here. Paul in Ephesians chapter 2 talked about this hatred. When you talk about things that had started to heal themselves, of Jew and Gentile relationships, there was a lot of hatred between those two groups, wasn't there? Probably as serious a hatred as between any that we read about in our Bibles. But in Ephesians chapter 2, Paul had talked about that, and he had talked about how Jesus brought these two groups together, Jew and Gentile. He had taken down that wall of separation between the two. He had made them into one new man, as Ephesians 2 talks about, and that they were now both accepted by God. And so, again, there's a lot there that I'm not going over, but it was through the cross that the shedding of Jesus' blood took that wall of partition down. And now, Peter going to be allowed to build it up again? No, obviously. I think Peter regretted this. We don't see that in the text, but my heart tells me that some of these great men, these apostles, had the regrets. I believe Paul had his regrets for the way he had treated earlier Christians. Peter, I think, regrets some things here that he's done. Any comments about any of that before we go on?
Martha. we better be very careful not to do what Peter did.
Yeah.
Or to follow like Cornelius.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that easy to follow.
Yeah.
But it's a matter of attitude of heart. There it is.
Yeah. Now, I know Nathan talks a lot about unity among the brethren. We need to hear that because it's something like this that just, I don't want to say it's out of the blue, but things that happen like this that can just divide brethren, it can send them to another church, lots of different things that happen in that. A brother, Nathan.
First century church, and even today, but it'd be more relevant back then because you're walking in first person. And when you obey the gospel, you are submitting to bury your old man.
Yes.
And then yet you see somebody in their grace or whatever. And then you want to revive and put CPR back into the old man. And it should be an obvious conflict that you're trying to get away from that. You have to get away from it.
Yes.
But live in your own way. Because you have
repentance, you said, hey, I want to turn my life around. But yet, you want to bring the old man with you. Yeah. Can't do it. Yeah. Thank you for your comments, all of you. The text in James, we're not going to look at this one's another good example. If you looked at it about how we tend sometimes to look at others, treat others, and how that can wreak a pride. A couple questions on the outline here to answer. About people being proud of their position. Who's a great Syrian army commander? You missed this, you gotta go home. Everybody knows it's Naaman. Yeah. We don't have time to go over this entire story, but you remember it. He's an honorable man. In fact, God, the text there in 1 Kings, there talks 2 Kings 5, talks about how God has been using this man to bring victory to Syria. And so, but he's a leper. He's an honorable man. He's a great, very valued man of valor. He's a leper. And so, you remember how the young girl, the young servant girl, goes to his wife and says, I know how he can be healed. There's a man, I'm paraphrasing now, there's a man in Israel who can help him with his leprosy. So long story short, he goes. He gets there. When he comes to Israel, he ends up right at the front door of Elisha, the prophet. And so what do you think he's expecting is going to happen now that Elisha will do for him that'll make him feel good? Yeah, he's thinking, as the text there talks about, he's thinking that Elisha's going to come out, wave his hand, leprosy's going to be gone, he's going to attribute it to God, and that'll be that. He'll be cured of his leprosy. So that may be a part of his pride. I think it may be that. It may be the fact that he's a great Syrian army commander, and now he's going into Israel for advice from a prophet. Several things at play here, but Elisha doesn't do that. What does Elisha do that might have gotten under his skin? Yeah, sends a messenger out the door and says, you need to go dip in the Jordan. Well, if that's you, is your pride going to take a little bit of a hit? I want to see the prophet. Whatever he might have been thinking. So that could have been it. Just the way that Elisha went about it. His servants, Naaman's servants, finally get him to reason that you've got to go do what you've been told. What are some of his objections about the River Jordan? What does he say?
Not as pretty as the one.
Oh, yeah. There are better rivers in Syria. So that may bother him, just the fact that he's got to go into the Jordan. We know how this story ends. It ends in a very beautiful way. He's cured of his leprosy. Does he praise God afterward?
Yes.
Oh, yes. He now believes in the God of Israel, like so many other cases we've seen in the Bible. So here's a man of pride. It nearly turns out to be a disaster for him. But because he has these humble people that are able to tell him, convince him what he needs to do, he does that. It's a great story. Hope you had a chance to read it.
Yeah. It is one thing I'm
yes, ma'am.
Worried about the Jordan River, and And now he's carrying on the dirt from Israel so he can worship on the right ground. It's amazing. I mean, he said, maybe my team will be worshiping idol, but I'll be standing here on some land I take and worshiping God. Yeah. It's quite a story.
It is a great story.
I don't know any other place in the Bible that someone does it.
You know, there's a lot of examples that we can make about baptism. And when we think about this story and the objection that some people put forward, you know, we'll talk about that at some future time. There's another good illustration here about the Apostle John. Who is the man that's so high-minded that he was ready to confront? Diotrephes, yeah. Sandra, can you read 3 John verses 9 and 10, please? 3 John verse 9 and 10.
I wrote something to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first among them, does not accept what we say. For this reason, if I come, I will call attention to his deeds, which he does, unjustly accusing us with wicked words. And not satisfied with this, neither does he himself receive the brethren. And he forbade those who desire to do so, and puts them out of the church.
Okay. What is it with Diotrephes? It's power. Some of the versions, my New King James Version uses the word preeminence. He wants to be the preeminent person there. Doesn't allow others to have a say, apparently. Doesn't receive that. He puts people out of the church. Diotrephes doesn't realize who paid with his blood for the church, does he? He thinks it's all about him. Remember the story in John chapter 9 where the blind man was healed? And that whole story there where he keeps trying to convince the Pharisees what's happened. They keep saying, who healed you? And if we remember that story, I think Nathan preached about that not too long ago. Do you remember the especially galling bit of pride that they had when that blind man just kept insisting it was Jesus? Remember what they said towards the end of that? You're teaching us. You know, that he told them it was Jesus, and so they cast him out of the synagogue, but in the process they said, you are teaching us, you dare teach us. That was the attitude of pride that the Pharisees had, that you're a blind man. How could you possibly have anything great to say to us? We're the ones with the knowledge. We make the decisions. How sad that is, that a whole group of men, the Pharisees as a whole. Now, were there some Pharisees saved? There were. We see that in the book of Acts and other places too. But that just terrible attitude that these men had about him. Yeah. Any comments before we move on? Okay. Are there consequences to bear when we have pride in our hearts? Well, you better believe it. There are. We've talked about some already. One of the consequences of having pride is that we end up thinking more highly of ourselves than we should. And I've got on there Mark 14, and Nathan, if I could have you turn over to Mark 14 and read verses 27 to 31. Two scriptures there, Mark, and we'll talk just briefly about Romans in just a minute. But Nathan, if you could go ahead and read that. Mark 14, 27 through 31.
Jesus said to him, you will all fall away because it is written, I will strike down the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go ahead of you to Galilee. But Peter said to him, even though all may fall away, yet I will not. And Jesus said, truly, truly, I say to you, that this very night, before a rooster crows twice, you yourself will deny me three times. But Peter kept saying insistently, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And they all were saying the same thing also.
Okay, good. What happened just a short time after this?
I don't know this guy.
Yeah. After all of that transpires, Daniel, what does Peter finally happens to him?
He goes out every week.
He weeps. He goes out and weeps bitterly. You think about that. But think about yourselves, brethren. Sometimes bitter tears help us to see where we're wrong. It helps us to see, since we're talking about pride, it helps us to see our pride. It helps us to, it just has this effect upon us that really humbles us. Our lessons about humility, we'll get to those thoughts here shortly, but it has a way of humbling us, doesn't it, to make us see where we've gone wrong. And I think this is part of what happens to Peter here. These bitter tears change him. A lot of regrets about this whole situation and what it, not so much what it caused Peter, but I think it haunted him for so long, what it cost Jesus when with his denial and all of those things that happened in those last several days of his life. Paul warns us in Romans 12:3, "For I say through the grace given to me to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith." It is easy, brethren, we know this, sisters, we know this, it's easy to have a higher opinion of yourself than you should have. God doesn't want us, now, let me ask you this, does that mean we go to the opposite extreme and just, oh, we're the dirt, we're trash? No, it doesn't mean that we do that. We just have to have a mindset with a little bit of knowledge and humility about who we really are. We're all sinners. We know that. We all have things that we need God's help with, so there's really no reason to be all pumped up about ourselves. But at the same time, we're as unworthy as we are of the blood of Christ and his sacrifice. God considers us worthy in some regards. We're sons of God. What else are we? We're the light of the world. We're the salt of the earth. Royal priesthood, yeah. So it's about balance. It's not that we want to go to either extreme, but just try to find the spot in the middle where the Lord wants us to be and have the proper thinking about ourselves. This is not on the outline, but you remember King Uzziah? We've talked about him recently when he was strong. Remember we talked about this story a couple weeks ago where he went into the temple. The priests all came and to get him out of there. The text there says when he was strong. I don't know how strong he was thinking about himself, but perhaps that had something to do with his attitude about going in there to begin with. How can pride cause contention among the brethren? We kind of addressed a little bit of this last week. Just a little bit ago when we talked about Galatia, what can happen in situations like that. Have brethren been known to argue over silly things? Tom, we heard that when Kelly's dad was here not too long about some of the things he's seen. As an elder, people end up fighting about the color of the curtains, the color of the carpet. It's not just that. Brethren can argue and fuss about things sometimes in business meetings. It happens. Among one another, the insensitive comment made in a congregation where it just hurts people. It can happen in so many ways. We can really start a battle between ourselves that divides us sometimes. Paul talked about that party spirit. I'm of this party. I'm of that party. You know there were some contentions there, don't you? Just as bad. When we have to be careful about pride and how what we say, how we got to be thinking about those words and guarding our words every time we speak. That'll come natural, of course, as we learn to love our brethren.
There was I guess First Corinthians would be a good place to go, Gary. And past these years, some were saying, "I'm a Paul, I'm a Cephas," and they were tagging themselves on them. Of some person that was a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And basically Paul says, "I didn't baptize anybody, but maybe a couple, but you got this wrong, it's not us." And then in chapter 2 he spends a lot of time saying, "I came to you with trembling and fear, and I didn't want to know anybody but Jesus Christ and him crucified," trying to get them to understand that.
Yeah.
It's not us, it's him.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be a great way to look at humility all the time? It's not about us, it's about him. We know this. I'm not telling you things you don't already know. Pride will keep us from becoming a Christian. How? How can pride keep somebody from becoming a Christian? Yeah. We're going to look at a scripture here in just a minute that talks about that. I don't need the Lord. I'm just not at that point in my life. I don't have time for the commitments that that serving the Lord and church and all of that stuff will have. I'm morally strong. I'm a good person. I go to church. You know, all of those kinds of things can come up with people sometimes. I just don't feel like I need to be a Christian. But my
I stopped going to church. There was only one congregation in our area. All white, except when I came. And I would get to the lobby, but first I dragged myself to get it. As soon as I get to the lobby and some say, I turn around and go back home.
Yeah.
And then I said, I'm going to stop. If I go, if I die, I knew where I was going. I knew where I was going. Okay? And you get to a point, you say, well, I'll start going back when I get back to the States. You think God will wait on you. Mm-hmm. Somehow you and the devil will figure something out that's going to work around you. And it can fool you, it can bite you in the butt. Thank God. I started going back again. And I stopped blaming them. For my shortcomings, I wasn't studying. I wasn't doing this. I wasn't doing that. But I also knew that if I died in my sins, where I would go. But also comes with that, I'm gonna wait. Just like you said, brother said, who are you? You know, when the disciples were confronted, oh God, I'm gonna be with you. I'm gonna be right there. I got your back, dog. And then, as soon as they hear who, all I do,
they're gone.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's like you hear it, but you don't believe what you are. You don't believe the knowledge that you have acquired.
Yeah.
So anyway,
yeah. Good point. The responsibility on both sides. We've seen, we know it exists in the churches. Black versus white. We've got to be loving. God doesn't see color. We've got to love one another, all of us. Regardless of color and how he's expressing the feelings that caused him to have. The others on the other side of that issue need to be thinking about their sin as well. Martha, turn over to Luke 7, please, if you would. Luke 7, verse 30. I'll have her read that in just a minute. Luke records here in chapter 7 that Jesus is in Capernaum. He's healing. He's healed a centurion servant. He's raised the widow's son from the dead. News about him going all around Judea, all the other places nearby, of what he's doing. He's taught multitudes. The common people are hearing the message that he has. Tax collectors are being baptized. But Martha, go ahead, look at verse 30. Martha, if you would read verses 29 and 30 there, please. Luke chapter 7.
And when all the people, including the tax collectors, heard this, they acknowledged God's way of righteousness. Because they had been baptized with John's baptism. But since the Pharisees and experts in the law had not been baptized by him, they rejected the plan of God for themselves.
Yeah. Isn't that sad?
Yeah. Isn't that plain words?
The New King James says they rejected the will of God for themselves. They didn't want it. These are supposed teachers of Israel, the Pharisees, and they have this attitude that day that they're going to they don't want it. That can happen to us, brethren. We've got to be careful about processing what we need to be processing as far as it goes with truth and where we're at, who we are, who God is. We've got to take all that into consideration and not come to the same state of mind that the Pharisees did here. Pride has a wonderful reward, doesn't it? Ask Nebuchadnezzar, who ends up eating grass in a field because of his pride. Oh, look at the great things I've done in Babylon. I've built here's my kingdom, what I put together. Now he's eating grass like an oxen.
It's amazing how it turns around.
Yes.
He says after that that he acknowledges that God has created it and put it in the
But Don, why does it take us so long to do that? It happens to us, doesn't it? God gets our attention and then we're humbled and, Lord, you're right. It happens to us too. Belshazzar, his son, bold, so bold, he uses the golden vessels out of the temple for everybody to drink out of at the big feast. He ends up with paleness in his face, knees knocking together when the fingers wrote on the wall, and then he is slain. Haman, recently studied about Haman's pride to destroy the Jews. He's the one who is destroyed. Herod eaten by worms. What was that story about? Do you remember what he did? Yeah, he gave a speech. And then when the men said, oh, not the words of a man, but this is a God. Words of a God. And he accepted that worship, didn't he? And just like that, I think the text there says immediately the angel... What was the cause of his death? Eaten with worms. How about that? They say worms are good for your intestines, but not that day. Struck by and eaten by worms, and then he died. David's counselor Ahithophel had a tragic ending. I hope you got a chance to look at that story. It's in 2 Samuel. What happened to this man? And what was he? Anybody know the story there?
He gave advice to Absalom. Take David out of the picture so that Absalom could be the king.
Yeah.
And Absalom's other advisors said not to follow that advice, so Ahithophel went and hung himself on his own.
Yeah. Absalom at one time was a counselor for David. And Hushai, the other man that Daniel's referencing here, was kind of secretly on David's side. And so Absalom, when he asked for counsel, both of the men gave it. And then when Absalom, who was trying to get the kingdom from David, went with Hushai's counsel, Absalom went out and hung himself over because of the fact that he didn't receive his counsel. Don? Yes. Joel himself. Joel, is that coming? We hit it all. lots of examples we could point out here. Let's talk about, how much time do we have? Boy, oh boy. Let's go over to what is humility. Somebody sum up what humility is. It's easy to describe.
The pride, isn't it? We're preferring to other people. More concerned about them instead of what we want.
Childlike, I guess.
Yeah. Let's look at some of the bullets on the outline here on this page. Instead of doing the definition like we do sometimes, we could really say that humility is everything that pride is not. Okay?
Being a servant to others.
Yeah, exactly. Humility is being like a child. You know, we have two wonderful examples in the audience here this morning, Chesley and Eden. Childlike faith. Having a lowly and gentle view of oneself, recognizing our dependence upon God. Anybody in here feel like they don't need God? We would be here if we felt that way. We need Him. We need His help. Humility is serving others, as Don said, not being served. It's about putting ourselves last, not first. It's having a realistic view of ourselves, not proud, not cocky, but humble. How can we have a proud attitude, brethren, when we start thinking about the blood that fell off of the Lord at Calvary? You can't be proud about anything. It's about having the mind of Christ. It's about being of a quiet and gentle spirit, not loud and proud, some in our day and time say, but gentle, quiet spirited. Yes, brother Mason.
30 years with local department law enforcement. He had a rolling stop sign. He's pulled over. And he graciously accepted the ticket. He told me he signed. I told him,
are to do that. Best thing to do is to do that. You don't argue with the officer pulling you over. It's time to be humble, isn't it? Humility is a lot more than those things that we just mentioned here. Christians are called to be humble people. God's kingdom is not made up of proud people. You won't find, in the end, the last day, you're not going to find proud people in God's kingdom. They're just not going to be there. Jesus in Matthew chapter 18 took that child aside, put him on his lap, and caused the man there to see. Here's my definition. If I can put it that way, here's my definition of pride. You have to be converted, he said in verse 3 of that text, as little children, or you will by no means enter into the kingdom of God. It's about the heart. I'm talking about something about the heart, not something that we put on when it's going to do us good, but it's an attitude of the heart that we have all the time. Childlike spirit. Humility is having an attitude of lowliness and gentleness. Ephesians chapter 4, where Paul there says, I beseech you to walk worthy of the calling. Again, there's that idea of the calling. I beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called, with all what? Lowliness and humility. Long-suffering, bearing with one another, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. We talked about that earlier. To have pride is to walk in an unworthy way, unworthy of the sacrifice of the Lord. Peter said to be clothed with humility. Here we see in that text in 1 Peter the idea of submission. All, submitting to all, brethren, submitting to God first, but submitting ourselves to our elders, to one another. I can remember a time when the man who wrote this, Peter, some of the things that he said, far be it from you, Lord, for this to happen to you. I'll die with you. And then the humility that comes after that. Now Peter speaks of humility. Now he speaks of submission in his writings. This hidden person of the heart, being clothed with humility. We've talked earlier about the associating with those who are humble. See that in Romans. Being in God's kingdom requires that we acknowledge some things about ourselves. We need Him. We just brought this point out a minute ago. We need God in our lives. We're encouraged to walk humbly with our Heavenly Father. It's not part of God's nature, and it's not part of my nature, shouldn't be a part of my nature either. We recognize our dependence upon Him. We have to walk humbly with God. You remember what Micah said? Micah chapter 6. Anybody able to quote that? It's a familiar one. He has showed you, O man. What does the Lord require of you?
Justice and love-kindness.
Justice, love-kindness. And walk humbly. Good. Walk humbly with your God. Acts 17 is a scripture that I've got on the outline there where it talks about our dependence upon God. He gives life and breath to everyone. If God were to take the air out of the room here this morning, we'd all perish. We're so dependent on what God has put in place. We live in Him, we move in Him, and we exist in God. Excuse me. Earlier we had talked about boasting. What do we have to boast about? We've got to be careful, brethren, about anything that we want to boast about. We just can't go that route. Jesus is our supreme example in this. I'm going through the outline pretty quick here. I'm going to quit in about 2 minutes. Jesus is our supreme example, meekness and lowliness of heart that He talked about having. Jesus said, "Learn from me. I am meek and lowly in heart. Learn from me." You ever thought about that? What that's going to require of us to learn of Him? I don't give that enough thought, and I need to think about it more. Okay. We have to seek to be last, not first. the mindset of humility is another one that I've hoped you've been able to look at on our outline here. We can apply that just about every way. It's not just about being humility, but if we have the mind of Christ in all of our thinking and all of our actions as Christians, that's going to benefit us. It's going to make us better people. Again, we've talked about having the proper view of ourselves and having this mind. Let this mind be in you as well. By calling attention to ourselves, the Pharisees were bad about that, weren't they? Look at me. They wanted to be seen of men. Paul said to aspire to lead a quiet and peaceable life. None of us wants to be in the limelight. We shouldn't want to be in the limelight all the time. And let our Heavenly Father do the exalting. He will lift us up in due time. Now, I've gone through that very fast. Again, I hope you've had a chance to look at those things in our lesson today. Next week, we'll get to our final lesson on hope, hearts of hope. And please take a look at that. We'll have that as our final lesson. And I think after that, we're going to be moving on to another study. Okay. Any comments before we close this morning? Thank you for your participation in the class this morning. My apologies for going through that quickly. I knew I was going to fight.